Okay, let's OSCO audio. Huh. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Funny thing is, I'm trying to do a screen capture of this, but I suspect I might not upload this recording because, as you see, the microphone does not seem to be doing much. Yeah, there doesn't seem anything, so I'm thinking I'm just getting video here, but I'm getting audio on my phone. I normally would use my laptop, but I forgot the VGA cable. Ah, that's the trouble with trying to do these things here. You have to have so many things right, and being a semester, it's hard to remember all of them. Anyway, so introduction. First off, I'm Anil Somayaji. Some of you have taken classes from me. I suspect most of you have not. First, you'll notice that I'm putting up the winter 2014 outline, and that's because the winter 2015 outline is actually basically identical to the 2014 outline, and I haven't had time to copy the page on my wiki. So I'm going to show you this part just to, for discussion right now, and after class I will do the copy-paste, because basically I am going to structure things essentially the same this term, with one significant change I'm going to try, which we will, I'll talk about that in a second. So, in case you're wondering, yes, you are in Fundamentals of Web Applications Comp 2406. This is a course that I developed, a couple of years ago now. I think I've run it a few times now. I haven't taught it since last winter. So I guess this is my fourth time teaching this class. I developed this class with the idea that in traditional computer science curriculums, we teach you about the stack of, we teach you about how computers work from the very lowest level hardware up to about operating systems. And in today's world, that doesn't go high enough. So in the current CS curriculum, we don't actually go as low as I would like. We don't really talk, in operating systems, I talk some about assembly and things. But I think that's a worthwhile trade-off given limited time in the curriculum because, and given this is a computer science degree, because there's a lot to cover in the higher parts of the stack. And in particular, the higher parts of the stack consists of web applications. So this semester, I'm going to try to teach you what exactly these web applications are. And I will start doing that after I've kind of given you some basic background. Now, first, before I start anything, Yeah, this is what I like about using my own computer, is then you have Emacs. There is no Emacs here. So we'll use WordPad. Very sad, but it gives me something to type with. So let's make this a little bigger. Okay. Can y'all see that? Should I make it bigger than that? So first off, grading scheme. Okay, let's make this bigger. I personally would prefer to use the chalkboard, but I've tried using the chalkboard in this room and no one can see it. It's a useless set of chalkboards here. So there's no point even trying to use them in this classroom. So for this class, the way you're going to be evaluated, first off, there's going to be a midterm, give me a final exam. I am not saying the date of the midterm yet. I am going to set the date of the midterm later this week. I want you all to tell me when your other midterms are. Because I am tired of having people come to me going, I have three other midterms right at the same time. And telling me that 1 week before the midterm. So I'm not going to set the date of the midterm this semester yet. I want to know when the other midterms are, and then I'll set my midterm so it doesn't directly conflict. Okay? But you got to tell me. So I'm going to ask. So I'll ask Wednesday to see if you all know, and maybe not Wednesday, maybe we'll do it next Monday. But by Monday, we'll decide when it is. And then after I set it, I'm not moving it. Fair? Okay. So there's a midterm. There's a final exam. The way I distribute the grades between these normally is I give 25% for the midterm and 35% for the final. So, okay, that's 60% of your grade. That's a good chunk of your grade. This is the part of your grade that requires you to know the material independently. You come in, you do the midterm, you come and do the final. If you know it, you know it. If you don't, you don't. No aids, nothing. It's paper exams. Normally, the questions will be in an exam book. I don't do multiple choice. I don't do multiple choice because for the kinds of questions I like to ask, if I give you multiple choice, either they will be trivial or they'll mess you up. Even the people who know what they're doing will get messed up because you knowing too much becomes a liability. So I don't like that. Now, I don't like grading these things. I will tell you that. But it's the best trade-off I have. These are long answers. You can look at past years to see this class and operating systems to see the kind of questions I ask. There'll be short answer. Maybe you'll have some explanations. In this course, typically you will have code on the midterm and final that you will have to read and interpret. Now, the reason why this is reasonable is because you'll have seen the code, either exactly that code or very close to that code elsewhere in the course. So if you don't know the code by the time you get to the midterm and final, you're in trouble. So that's 60% of your grade, midterm, final. What's the rest? The rest, assignments. My typing is going to be pretty bad because I normally type Dvorak. So 20% assignments and 20% tutorials. The tutorials, you all should have signed up for a tutorial section for this class. You need to attend one tutorial section a week. Not this week, but starting next week. I want you to attend tutorial sections. And this is important because it's 20% of your grade. And that grade is essentially a participation mark. If you show up in tutorial and do what we tell you to do, you're going to get the marks. So don't blow it. My midterms tend to be on the hard side. And the final exam, normally I recalibrate and it's a bit easier, but your grades are not going to be as good as they can be if you blow off tutorials. But I've done some interesting things with my classes that I've looked at. Okay, well, maybe some of you are really good, and so you can just sort of skip the tutorials and things and then come in and, you know, wow me in the midterm final, and you'll say, you know, just give me the grade that I get in the midterm final. So I actually, you know, generally consider that, and almost nobody does better if I just give them the grade from the midterm and final. Basically nobody. People do better if I drop the midterm. People don't do better if I drop the assignments and tutorials. This is where you raise your grade. So show up. And if for any reason you can't show up, go to a TA in their office hour and get checked off. That means show them that you've done the work of the tutorial. And do that in a timely fashion. There is no excuse to not have essentially 100% on the tutorial marks. That is simply a question of effort. The assignments. Okay, there's effort there, and there can be some difficulty. You have to learn the material. But you can collaborate freely on the assignments. Assignments are open book, open note, open internet, and open collaboration. All I ask is that you list your sources, including other people you work with. Disclose what sort of collaboration. That way we can keep track of saying, oh, this stuff is really, you know, this resource is really useful. Or if you're using a resource that is misleading you, then I can, you know, we can say, oh, don't use that website. It's got crazy things. Because this is a web class. So you've got to use the web to do well in this class. You're going to be searching for answers. The trick is to use that resource in a way that doesn't compromise your understanding. Another tip for learning in this course. If you're trying to answer everything by a web search, you're doing it wrong. You really are doing it wrong. You should be trying to build up a mental model of how to do the things we do in this class and then use that to answer things. If you come across something, well, I haven't seen that before. Okay, do a search. Or, I used to know that and I forgot it. Okay, look that up. But if you're looking up code on the internet and then trying to mangle it in some way to make it fit the assignment, you might be able to get to the assignment, but it will take you 5 to 10 times the amount of effort it would otherwise, and it will detract from your understanding that you need for the midterm and final. It's a losing strategy in terms of time management and in terms of success of this course. If you find that you don't understand what's going on, an internet search may help you, it may not. You have to say, I don't understand what's going on here, and get help. Come to my office hours. Come to, the TA's office hours. I get those all. So by the way, the TAs, we've got like 7 of them. I don't even know half of them right yet. This is Monday, the beginning of the semester. I will let you know by Wednesday everyone's office hours and stuff. So that's the other reason why I put up the outline, because I got like the first class on the schedule. So, but you have to go and get help if you don't understand things. If you do that, I give out a lot of A's. But some people every semester manage to get C's, D's, and F's. And it always disappoints me. I'm going like, come on. But almost always the people who get the C's, D's, and F's did one of two things. Either they didn't put in the time or they used really bad strategies for trying to learn the material, such as they just tried to look everything up. Don't do that. Coming out of this class, you should have a mental model of how things work when it comes to web application. What it is, how are things fit together, and you should be able to use that mental model to be able to predict what you can find on the web. You should be able to use it to evaluate technologies that come along. That when you talk about another web technology, you should be able to look at it and say, oh, it's just like this. Oh, it provides this capability. Oh, it's just doing this. You should be able to make those kind of connections. If the only thing you can do is use the tools that I teach you in this class, you have not learned the material in this class. So, that's your grade, those 4 pieces. Questions? So, talk to you about collaboration, talk about grading. So this wiki, homeostasis.scs.carlton.ca, that's my machine. If you're wondering what the name comes from, I can tell you, but it actually has there's a reason for that name. But I have a wiki there. All my class notes are there. I'll put links up from various other places to here. But this is where you're going to go for material. I do use CU Learn for submitting assignments and for posting grades, but that's about it. Because, good Lord, as a web application, it leaves a lot to be desired. So, I mean, it's useful because it has accounts set up for everyone and things, but yeah, I'm not going to leave my content in there. And besides, I like making the content I do in my classes just freely available. It also keeps me honest. I do recycle quite a bit, but if you try using the stuff from my past years for this year, it can help you, but you have to be careful. It can also mislead you. So feel free to look at any past year and stuff, but pay attention to what I'm doing in this year because it changes every time. And the reason it changes every time, well, first off, it's because the material changes around you. Like, for example, last time I taught this course, it was using Express 3. This semester, we've got to use Express 4. Why? Because Express 4 is the current one. I could teach you Express 3, but hey, with the web, you got to keep up. So that's one reason. The other thing is I would get bored if I tried teaching the same thing over and over again. So look at the past things, But remember, it's going to change. So I will be uploading audio and often video from my lectures to the wiki, or links to it will be the wiki. I'll be trying to use Camtasia Relay when it works, but that will be there. So you might say, oh, I'm uploading the lectures, so do I need to come here? Well, I would highly recommend you come here. And the reason why I'd recommend you coming here is because one of the best ways for you to deal with the material I present is to think about it as I go through it and then realize, whoa, I don't catch where you're going there. And to ask a question, if you're dealing with a recording, you can't ask a question in real time. It's much more time efficient to just come here and ask a question. It also helps the other people who are here. If you can't make it to the lecture, fine, catch up, but try to come to most of the lectures because that helps. And you might say, well, I get distracted during lecture, I want to pay attention to things. Bring your laptop. That's fine. I don't mind if you have your laptop, but I'd suggest if you have your laptop, look up the things I talk about in class. I'm going to be talking about stuff from the web. I'm going to be giving you examples, exercises when I'm doing stuff with web stuff. Go ahead and do it. I would suggest you bring a laptop if you want to do experimentation as opposed to a tablet or a phone, simply not because they can't do it in principle. It's just because the development tools are much better on laptops. So, but if you want to come to class and just bring a piece of paper and pencil or just come here and listen, I think it's worth your time. Make your own decision. That you all are adults. I don't take attendance in lecture. I put all them here online. Do what's best for you. But in general, the people I've noticed who tend to succeed, either this class is way easy because you've already been doing web development for a couple of years, of which I know there are some of you in this class that are in that category, and that's fine, although still I might have a couple of things to teach you. But then otherwise it's people who show up. So required textbooks. So, the textbooks, has anyone seen these in the bookstore? Did they actually show up? The bookstore? Okay, good. So, the two books that I specify as required are JavaScript, The Good Parts, and Learning Node. Can you get away without these books? Yes. I can't tell you, though, how many of the questions that come up in class were oh, that's covered in the book. It's really helpful. Or they say, oh, wow, your lectures really made a lot more sense after I read the textbook. They're not a substitute for what I do in class, but they are a great supplement. They will give you background. They will help. Again, it's learning. Learning is all about bringing lots of source material together to gain knowledge. Use these resources. They're good for different things. I'll tell you what they cover in a bit. You might also want to get MongoDB. I don't mess that as a requirement because this is much more supplemental, and this stuff you can definitely more get from the web. But if you're wondering what the heck this MongoDB thing is, it's a good book to get and look at. So next thing, course software. So I have, in my classes normally, I use a virtual machine to give you a standard operating environment for doing all the class assignments. I make sure everything works inside the virtual machine. It's a VirtualBox image. It will import fine into VMware or probably Parallels. I haven't tried Parallels. Any sort of virtualization software you have. It's a pretty standard Linux image. Feel free to use it whatever environment. If you like using Windows or you really like using Mac OS or you have your own Linux distribution, I know some of you are fans of Arch. This virtual machine is Ubuntu. I'm sorry, okay, but go ahead and use whatever you want. That's all good. I don't mind that, but you have to debug it on your own too. All kinds of weird things come up when you try installing some of these tools, especially on Windows. Getting these tools working on Linux, working on Mac OS, is generally not too bad. I mean, there's a few gotchas and in macOS, but it's mostly okay. Especially if you're used to installing other open source software on Macs. Windows, it's a pain. It's a pain. It takes me like at least an hour, hour and a half to get the environment set up. And I've done it before. I mean, Linux, it takes me like 5 seconds. I type in a couple commands and it's done. So, up to you. The material we cover in this class is fundamentally cross-platform because the web is cross-platform. So I don't dictate the operating system, but in the tutorials, the environment we'll be using is a Linux virtual machine. Come into the tutorials, use that VM, and then you can have that same VM on your own computers. And then I have scripts so that you can synchronize information between them so that you don't have to start over again between them. And who knows, at some point during this class, I might get access to persistent VMs that the SCS department provides, but I haven't heard anything about it, so I'm not holding my breath. But there's supposed to be we're supposed to be getting our own little cloud infrastructure in computer science. We have the machines. They aren't quite working yet. But if they do get working, I would like to try using them for a year because it's really nice to have your own web server running on your own virtual machine because then you can access it like a real website. So as I hope you'll understand, what it means to say something's a real website versus not a real website. It's a rather funny statement. So get the VM, use that, or use your own environment. I'll be talking later on Wednesday about setting up the software and things. I don't want to get into that just yet. I think I'm going to be giving you enough material with this. So I'll get my office hours and everything up. Tutorials, collaboration, grading. Okay. That all covers all the administrative stuff I want to cover. Questions? Oh, one thing I didn't tell you about the assignments. They're weekly. So the idea is that you have a tutorial, and then you have an assignment associated with the tutorial. So go into the tutorial, get help with the assignment, then turn the assignment by the following week. Yes, the assignments are weighted equally. They may not have the same number of points, but they are weighted equally. The points are just a scoring thing. It's tempting to try to make it some other way, but I think it keeps everyone sane if they're the equal weight. Certainly some of them are going to be easier than others. Some of them are going to take more time than others. But for the purposes of grading, they're equal. Yes? No, weekly. But yeah. So for those of you who took operating systems, it's going to be the same basic deal. I could make them more spread out, but then I'd have to make them bigger assignments. And it just seems to work better. I would prefer to have fewer assignments. They're kind of bigger. It kind of makes it a little easier administratively, but it doesn't seem to lead to better outcomes. It seems the best way to learn this material is to stay continuously involved with it. So I've got to provide incentives for you to stay continuously involved with it. Hence the assignments. Other questions? So now what I want to do is start talking about web applications and the material covered in this course. So a lot of times in my lectures, I like to take breaks in the middle. I'm not going to do that today because I'll probably just end a bit early so that if any people want to come up and ask me questions and stuff, that's fine. But normally I like to do like a 5-minute break right around the mid mark. So this class, it runs from 10 to 11:30, so like around 11:10 or so, I'd probably take about a 5-minute break, but not today. Was that 11? That makes no sense. 11:10. No. It'd be 10:45. Around 10:45. So now let's talk about. There we go. That's a little better. I'll be so glad when I have my machine with my cable up. Anyway, the web. Before you get into this class, getting the material, understanding why I've chosen to teach what I'm going to teach, you have to get an idea of terminology. It's when people talk about what is the web, people often say, oh, the web, that's the internet, right? And it's like, no. There was a perfectly good internet for a couple of decades before the web came out. For those of you who know, the internet started as a piece of technology in the early 70s. The World Wide Web was developed in 1993. And has been developing since. The internet is not the web. Although certainly the web is much of the traffic that is on the internet, but think about something like Netflix. Netflix is a huge chunk of you know, North American bandwidth during peak hours. It's like the majority or something. It's like ridiculous. Is Netflix the web? You can watch it in a web browser. I can watch it on my phone. I mean, it's streaming video. Streaming video coming through lots of different clients. What else is there? There's also, is streaming video, you know, is that kind of a new thing? It's like, you know, there was things like Real Player, Real Audio and things back in the mid-90s that was doing video on the internet. I mean, that was this own little custom app. Was that fundamentally different from the Netflix of today? No, not really. So to understand when we talk about the web, you have to have a bit of knowledge of the communication stack, of what it means to what the internet is. So I'm going to talk more about this as the semester goes on, but fundamentally, we can just think of it in very simple terms, which is that you have a client and you have a server. So in web terms, so the web is, to a first approximation, client-server computing. It gets more complicated, but we'll say for first approximation, it's that. What is the client for a web in the web? A user of the server. That's for client-server computing in general. But when we talk about client, but here we're specifically, generally, it's the web browser. That's the client. What's the server? It's a web server. So client-server computing is talking about you have one computer talking to another, and the reason why you call it client-server versus something else like peer-to-peer is because they have fundamentally different roles. One is providing a service to the other. So when you're sitting there on a web, on your desktop, on your laptop, on your phone, you're running a web, an application, a web browser, that is then connecting to other computers around the world. It's connecting to web servers, which are web server applications running on other computers around the world. It connects them and gets a service from them. But what is that thing that you're getting? In principle, you're getting the client, the web browser. Now I'm putting this in quotes. So at its very simplest, a web browser asks for web pages and web servers give out web pages. Remember, the web was originally designed as a hypertext document system. You go there, you find all this knowledge. You go online and connect to the web, and you'd start surfing around, and there would be these web rings that would connect you from one website to another, and you'd keep clicking, and you'd go from these different sites. You notice I say that as the past. I mean, that all still exists. But that's not really what the web is today. Because we still request web pages. And servers still serve web pages. But this communication is really used for something very fundamentally very different. It's really distributed computing. What's really happening is your web browser is running programs. Web servers are running programs. And so when you're on the web, programs talking to programs. Of course, it's always been that way. I should really say downloaded programs on the modern web. When you access a web page, what you're really doing is downloading a program to your computer and running that program in your web browser, and then it's doing something. It may talk to other computers more. It may talk, it may request other web pages from other web servers, or it may do something completely different. I mean, modern web browsers are having built-in provisions for doing video, for doing real-time chat, for doing basically, you name it, a web browser is starting to be able to do it. Download a program, run a game based on the Unreal Engine. You know, the Unreal Engine now will run inside a web browser. So, if you know anything about graphics and things, I'm like, wow, that's a little heavyweight. But modern web browsers are very powerful runtime environments. Think about all the power you're supposed to get in a Java virtual machine. Web browsers are better. First off, because they're faster. Second of all, because they're everywhere. So if I say that programs, web servers serve pages, and web browsers serve programs, what language are those programs written in? Nope. Not on the web. On the web, basically only one language counts. Nope. HTML is something that you download. You download HTML all the time. But HTML, okay, technically it might be Turing complete if you use some of the weird options, but really it's designed to provide markup. It is a markup language for documents. It still is a markup language for documents. It's really a very small part of the web in a fundamental sense. It's there. You're going to need to spend some time learning about it, of which I will tell you about in a second how you should do that. But the real what this really is, these programs, they're JavaScript programs. And that's the web service sendout, is JavaScript. The web is built on JavaScript. You turn off JavaScript in your web browser, not much works anymore. Most of the web breaks. I mean, the old cruft, you know, parts and stuff, yeah, the stuff that's pure HTML, that still works. Try doing much of anything with just that. It's really sad. It's actually kind of a fun exercise. If you play with, so some people recommend that you run something called NoScript in order to improve your security. It's an extension for a lot of web browsers, particularly Firefox. I think it's a version of Chrome. But you install it, and then it blocks JavaScript from selected websites or from selected domains. NoScript's kind of fun because it shows you all the interesting ways in which modern web pages can break. When you disable parts of them. I mean, you'll have things that you visit a web page, you think, oh, this is perfectly fine. Oh, did you see that big video on that page? No. There was video on that page? I didn't notice it. Or did you see that big comment box? There was comments? I didn't realize there were comments on that page. Because they're all inserted by JavaScript. And NoScript disables that. So the reason why I'm saying all this about JavaScript is because this class is fundamentally about JavaScript. This is what you're going to spend your time learning about more than anything else. Now, if you talk about web technologies, it's really a triumvirate. The web normally is people say equals HTML plus CSS plus JavaScript. I am of the opinion that a second-year computer science student should be able to either already knows HTML and CSS, or should be able to learn it in very short order. So, learn it. Now, I'm not being completely flippant, I'm actually quite serious. Go learn it. How do I suggest you learn it? I'll give you a baseline of functionality that I think you should learn. Learn to code interactively for free. Go here. You don't have to use this, but what I suggest you do is you go through their module on HTML and CSS. And I think it would also be helpful if you go through their JavaScript and jQuery ones. Go through these things. Start with HTML and CSS, then go through JavaScript, and then go through jQuery. Now, you might go, wait a second. Isn't that what we're covering in this class? Kind of. This is computer science, university level. This is not learn how to program in 30 days. The material that you're going to learn here with HTML and CSS and the kind of JavaScript you learn here is your basic syntax, here's what it is kind of thing. It'll let you, I mean, it's like talking about the difference between like learning the basics of English grammar and learning Shakespeare, you know, or any sort of like serious significant works of literature. This course is much more at the literature level than it is at the, oh, here's the grammar. And you might say, well, wait, I don't know the grammar. How can I understand the literature? Well, you actually do, because this isn't a first programming class you had. You all have had at least two other programming classes by this point. A lot of you had three programming classes at this point. So, in principle, you know something about programming. Programming is programming. You know how to program. It's another language. Big deal. Now, there are some weirdnesses to JavaScript. I will grant you that. That's one of the things I will be teaching you is how JavaScript is not like C, is not quite like Java. How it is has its own quirks and has its own special kind of power. Because the fact that JavaScript took over the world is in part an accident and in part something fundamental about the language. And I'll let you decide which it is, but I think it's actually a little more about how good the language is as opposed to the accident part, because the accident part explains why JavaScript has so many annoyances. And JavaScript is an annoying language in many ways. It has just mistakes. I can't say anywhere. But that's because the language was developed in about 10 days. You know, seriously, 10 days. Back in the mid-90s, Netscape wanted a programming language that they could integrate into their web browser to allow web pages to be active. They wanted their web pages to be able to do things like have menus that drop down and things that would follow your mouse. So they needed a programming language to do this. They just wanted a simple little programming language. They gave some guy, I can't remember how to pronounce his last name, Brandon Eich. Anyway. They gave one guy, said, give us a programming language. So they gave him a programming language. And they got incorporated in Netscape. And then Microsoft incorporated into Internet Explorer. And then everyone had it. So it just sort of got there. But then you might say, well, why didn't it die if it's such a bad language? And the real reason why JavaScript, I think, has certain fundamentally good things is that's what enabled it to survive. JavaScript's an amazingly flexible language. And it's because it's built on some core computer science ideas that go back to the 1950s. How many of you have heard of Lisp, the Lisp programming language? You should think of JavaScript. So that's a good, like, a third of you, maybe. Lisp, for those of you who don't know, is one of the oldest programming languages still in use, or even, I think, period. I think it was developed originally in 1958. It's a bit newer than Fortran. But it's a very old language. You may have, if you've seen it around, it's got lots of parentheses. So Lisp is an amazingly powerful language that very few people use today. JavaScript, however, is essentially Lisp with C-like syntax. Lisp was designed to do artificial intelligence. And it's amazing how something designed to do something very powerful has actually turned out to be very useful. So that's a language. If you take 3007, you learn Lisp or its variant scheme. If you've taken 3007 before this class, you're going to find a lot of overlap in terms of discussions about JavaScript, although this is going to be very specialized and applied to the context of the web. But this is why JavaScript is deceptive. People think it's a very simple language. Actually, it has at its heart the deepest ideas we have about programming language design and about how you make code. So don't be fooled by JavaScript. It's got depth. It's very real. It's very powerful, and you need to learn it. So get the basics of JavaScript here. Get the base of HTML and CSS. What is HTML? It's document markup. Bold tags. Here's a document. If you have questions about it, we can go through it. I will talk about it at a high level, but it's not that hard. People pick it up in middle school. There's a reason for that. CSS, again, is not that hard. It's cascading style sheets. It's markup. It's not markup. It's properties, styling for those tags. So you say, I want to have a paragraph. HTML says you want a paragraph. CSS says, I want my paragraph to be in, you know, Times New Roman in 14 points or something. Although the web doesn't quite work that way because it has to adapt to different size displays. But that's the basic idea. So HTML, CSS, learn the basics of it. We're actually going to have it mostly wrapped behind a programmatic wrapper. You're not going to be producing hardly any JavaScript, hardly any HTML or CSS in this class. You'll be using programs that do it for you. That's why we don't cover it too much. Although you should have an idea of the basics of the syntax so you can help, you know, understand what's going on and help debug things. So I'll pause for a breath. How are y'all feeling? You should feel like, I don't quite know what he's talking about, but kind of seems like it relates to something I've known at some point, maybe. That's okay. You're going to see the same terms, the same material come up again and again in this class. That's by design, because you won't get it on the first pass. You probably won't get it on the second pass. Don't worry about it. You should be looking to see, how do I understand what's going on? By around two, you know, by one-third through the class, you'd feel like I understand a little bit of something. By two-thirds of the class, you feel like, okay, this is starting to come together, and hopefully by the final, you'll go, okay, this all makes sense to me. That's the theory, at least. See how it goes. So let's go back here. HTML, CSS, and JavaScript are all technologies that run normally in a web browser. From a web server's perspective, they're mostly just files. It just, let me download the HTML file. Well, let me download the style sheet for this. Okay, let me download a JavaScript file included with it. These are just files. The web server is just handing out files. But this class is about more than just the web clients. It's actually mostly about the web servers. So this is where things get a little weird. It turns out we're going to talk about JavaScript not just in a web browser, but also on the web server. You might go like, wait, what about Java? What about PHP? What about Go? If you know anything about web server, server-side technologies for the web, there are a lot of programming languages for web servers. A lot of them. Why not C Sharp? Well, why not? Why not Ruby? Why not Python? You can basically use any programming language to write a web server, to write a web application server, in fact. So it's not just serving files, but actually providing the application support that we're going to be talking about that you need in this class to build a modern web application. But we're going to do it in JavaScript. So you might go like, why? Especially since the most popular web the most popular languages on the web is probably like PHP. Why don't I teach PHP? Well, I could teach PHP. There's two problems. One is PHP is a horrible language. But the other problem, but I mean, sometimes you have to use horrible language because lots of code is written in it. And there's a lot of really good applications written in it. So I could teach PHP. But I'm going to teach you JavaScript on the server because I've got to teach you JavaScript anyway. I have to teach it to you to understand the clients. And all these things on the server side have to at some point generate JavaScript that goes to the client. Because they've got to give them programs to run. So if I do JavaScript on the server and the JavaScript on the client, then I just have one language to teach you. Okay, that's a fun academic exercise. How is this at all relevant? Well, because JavaScript has been used so much, it turns out JavaScript runtimes have become ridiculously fast. So there is this thing called Node.js. That's what we're going to be using a lot. That's our server-side technology. We're going to be learning Node. And all Node is someone took the Chrome web browser, ripped out its JavaScript engine, and turned it into a web server. Turns out you don't have to add much to it. You just have to add some stuff for doing network and file I/O and stuff. Because JavaScript, interestingly enough, does not really know about files and does not really know about general networking. Because JavaScript was designed for running inside a web browser, and you don't want to have full general disk and network access inside a web browser. Otherwise, you'd be downloading a botnet client. So we'll talk about the security issues in running random code on your machine, you know, later through this class, but I'll just say right now, it's potentially dangerous. So JavaScript has a number of restrictions on it to make this not so dangerous. Node.js gets rid of those restrictions, extends the language to have things that you more normally expect in a web server. So, okay, JavaScript in the client, JavaScript in the server, fine. But Node does one other thing really well, which is very important for this class. It's built on asynchronous input-output. Most programming languages that you're used to are built on synchronous I/O. It's not to say you can't do asynchronous I/O, but it's the exception, not the rule. And thus, you see most of the code that's built is, in fact, synchronous. So what do I mean by this? Synchronous I/O means, let's say I do a read, say from a file or from a network socket or whatever. I want to read in some data. I want to say source buff. Yeah, that's sort of the general syntax of some sort of read. You know, I want to read from some source, a file descriptor, or or a disk or whatever, and then I've got a buffer to put the data into. In general, when I execute this command, the data I am requesting is not there because it has to be read off of disk. It has to come over the network. It's oftentimes not available. So what happens? The program waits, or it blocks. that's not what Node does. That's not what JavaScript does in general, even on the in the browser, but it really doesn't do this on the server side. Now, if you think about the way you normally reason about programs, you should realize, whoa, this is wrong. Because this means that normally when I write this sort of thing, the next line, I could do something I do something with the buff on the next line of my code. But I can't do this if it's asynchronous. If it's asynchronous, that means that I call this read and it hasn't necessarily completed. It potentially failed. So at the very least, I would have to check read and say, did you actually read any data or not? I would say, if buff, then do something. But then now every time you do something, you're going to have to do this if. And that's also really inefficient, because then what you're going to do, put it in a loop. You'll make a loop and you'll say, while not buff, read buff. You know, read source buff. Okay, now your program just continuously waiting for something to happen. You've made it block. And that's how, in fact, how you turn asynchronous I/O into synchronous I/O. You just keep doing it again and again and again until it succeeds. Is that efficient? No, not at all. What you really want to do is be notified when the thing is done. So for example, if I ask the TAs to do something, if I ask a TA to do something, is it efficient for me to go, say, maybe every hour go like, have you made up the assignment? Have you made up the assignment? Have you made up the assignment yet? Have you made up the assignment? Send them an email. Send them a text message. Call them up. Knock on their office. Do this every hour. Is this an efficient use of my time? That is synchronous. I/O is basically, you know, checking constantly. Or just saying, okay, go get the assignment. I'm going to sit here and wait until it's done. That's actually what really synchronous I/O is. Make the assignment. I'm going to sit here until it's done. And then I sit on my couch and twiddle my thumbs. Until it's done. Not an efficient use of my time. What I really want to do is say, go make up the assignment and I go work on something else. And then they come back and they say, oh, it's done. And I say, thank you. Now I go and proofread it. That is an efficient pattern of resource usage. But that's not how your programs are written normally. They sit there to make a request and just wait until that request is finished. That's not good enough for the web. When we talk about the web, we're talking about pushing computers to their limits. Anyone have an idea of how many computers Google runs? I don't know the exact number because they don't tell anyone the exact number, but I know roughly how many computers is behind Google.com. Hmm? I last heard about 2 million. Probably more by now. That's a lot of computers. And this isn't a lot of computers. Oh, 2 million desktops. No. This is warehouses full of computers. You know where they put modern data centers? They have a very good algorithm for choosing where to put a data center. If you want to like find a good location, they use the same algorithm they used to use for aluminum smelters. Aluminum smelters require cheap, reliable access to electricity. That's what a modern data center needs. Cheap, reliable access to electricity. So you stick them by a hydroelectric dam. Or you build them with redundant power sources or other things. I mean, that's why people like Google are into green energy and stuff. It's because it's the modern industry. I mean, the amount of resources data centers consume nowadays is insane. And somehow it's all powered by advertising, which is still an amazing thing, I find. But yeah, it's a heavy industry. It consumes a lot of resources. And so when you're trying to make programs run across hundreds of thousands to millions of computers, you use your resources wisely. You want to program things that aren't just going to, you want to use programming paradigms for what will be, will make good use of things. And it turns out asynchronous I/O is one of the best ways of making use of resources, because it's a way of making programs not wait. You know, basically you have always had the program doing something. You might say, well, why don't I make it multi-threaded? Multi-threaded isn't as efficient, because you have to do the whole thread switching. Basically, multi-threaded is a hack on synchronous programs in order to make them act kind of asynchronous. But the real way of doing it is you do it like this. And this is the pattern of functions that you're going to see in this class. So you're always going to see this other argument. You're going to see this, you know, give some number of arguments, some other things, and then you're going to give a callback. You know what that callback is? It's the phone number where to reach you when you're done doing what you're doing. Saying, when you're done doing what you're supposed to do, do this. Except this callback is a function. It's code. You give the read function a function to run. And it will run that function when it completes. So this is how you will be constructing your web applications. On the client and the server, is you will be creating functions that are then passed around to other things to run when the right circumstances come about. Run this function when some data comes in from the network. Run this function when someone clicks on a button. Run this function when someone presses a key on the keyboard. And someone else takes care of the problem of figuring out when to call your code. You don't know when it happens. You don't care. You don't think about the exact order in which your code's going to be called. It's a useless way of conceptualizing your program. The way you think about your program is in terms of what is the stimulus and what's the response? What's the thing that's going to happen and how should I react to it? It's a different way of programming. Not the way you've been taught up to this point. It's a very important way of programming. And that's what we're going to be teaching you. So big ideas in this course is things like asynchronous I/O, callbacks. Based on callbacks, notice I'm going to use functions as data. We're going to pass them around like any other data type and use them. Distributed computing, networking, databases. That's what this course is about, is that whole mix of technologies and others that make the modern web. It's a lot of ground to cover, a lot of stuff to fit in your heads. And the thing you have to get used to is you're not going to understand all the pieces completely. Modern web browsers like 5 million lines of code or more. War and Peace is about 100,000 words. You're not going to understand all of it. It's bigger than you are. It's bigger than any human, what they can fit inside their brains. That's the kind of things we built. And to be a modern programmer, software engineer, computer scientist means being able to deal with programs that you do not understand. What you do is you build a mental model that gives you enough of a basic understanding to do what you need to do, and then as it surprises you, you refine that model. You learn what you need to as you need it. And that's what you're going to be doing in this class. You will have tutorials where I'll say, go do this, and I say, you didn't tell me how to do this. No, I didn't tell you how to do this. Go figure it out. Most of the time, to go figure it out is do a Google search, and it will show you exactly how to do it. But I'm not going to just lay out for you exactly what you have to do. You're going to have to do a bit of work. You're going to have to put the pieces together. You have to integrate the material. I regard this as a very important skill. Because when you get out of this, you know, get out of your bachelor's, you're going to go off to jobs and no one's going to give you, oh, this is all the material you'll need for doing this program. No. No, they're not. There's basically never a manual that tells you all you need to know. Never. There might be a manual that acts like it has everything that you need to know about a program, and then when you look at that manual, it's out of date and wrong and incomplete. At the end of the day, all you have is the code and whatever else you can figure out. So in this class, you'll have code that you look at and then whatever other resources you can use. We're going to start small. We'll start simple. We're going to build up in complexity over time. So we should be able to keep you all, you know, along. If you get lost, let me know. But we're touching a lot of technologies here. In some sense, these technologies aren't unfamiliar because, of course, you use them all the time. This is the stack that's behind Google. This is the stack that's behind Facebook. This is behind WhatsApp. It's behind everything you use nowadays. This is the technology stack in one form or another. So you're actually familiar with its properties, albeit probably mostly at an unconscious level. So a lot of times you'll see this class going, oh, that's why that breaks that way. Or that's how that works. So that's why there's that restriction or something. Like, you know that, you see like places like Amazon. They know, they leave you logged in for a long period of time. You'll sit there and be doing all your things, putting things in your shopping cart. But then, before you actually buy something, they ask you for your password. It's like, hey, you knew who I was. Why are you asking me for my password now? I'm already logged in. Well, it turns out it's really important for it to ask you your password if you don't want random people using your account and buying computers and shipping it to their address. It's required for the security of the app. And it's required for the security of the app because of design decisions that were made back in 1993 that were really good ideas back then and are problematic today. In this class, you will learn why you're typing in that password and how that fits in with the rest of the wonder and craziness that is the web. So it's quite a ride. There's a lot to cover, but I think you can do it. I've done it a number of times now, and people generally come out with reasonable grades. And they seem to come out saying they know things, at least some of them. You know, I would not say this is not a standard class. I do not have a standard textbook for this class. I don't believe I ever could have a standard textbook for this class. And the reason I can't do it is because if I spend the time to make a perfect textbook, by next year, it'll be out of date. There are certain core ideas, certain core concepts I want to cover. I do cover them, but how they're expressed and how I relate them to what you need to know just keeps changing. I mean, maybe in 20 years, the technology stack will settle down enough and it'll become like traditional operating systems where there are nice textbooks using things and there's old code and things haven't really changed at the core for decades. The web is not that place. So I will right now say one thing. I'm sorry. Because you're just going to shake your head and go like, why is it this way? And I'll just end with one thing. One thing. So as part of HTML, well, HTML is normally served over a protocol called HTTP, which we'll talk about in depth later. As part of HTTP, there are various headers. One of the headers is called refer. How do you spell refer? With two R's. How many R's will it have in the headers that you will see? One R. Because someone misspelled it. and it can't ever be changed. This is a header. This is a real header that's used. This says when you visit one, like if I'm on Slashdot and I click on a link and I go to some other website, that blog sees that I came from Slashdot via the referrer header. And it's spelt like that. That is the web. I'll stop there. See you Wednesday.